Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, my buddy Ken Moore, our neighbor here in Chapel Hill and Carrboro, is well known to the garden crew here. He was the first employee of the North Carolina Botanical Garden, was there beginning in 1971. Many of us also know him best as the columnist in the late lamented Carrboro Citizen. Wonderful front page column about what was going on botanically in our area. And Ken, I mean, I miss that column so much. Thanks for coming to talk to us, though.
Well, it's my pleasure being here. And yeah, I still get people who almost daily say, "Oh, Ken, we really miss that column," because and it made me feel good, because the reason for my putting energy into that was to make all of us, even people who are not botanically or don't really pay much attention to what's on the roadsides or even what's on the edge of their woods or what's sort of hunkered down there in their lawn, and they mow over things like little elephant foot, which I've had some friends lately say, "Oh, I saw these little flowers blooming," and because they hadn't mowed for a couple of weeks. And so people really start taking a closer look at what is all around us. And it's so exciting that in some respects, well, I don't need to go to the mountains or the coast, which I love to do, but there's so much excitement
all
around
right
here.
All right, you got me
there
going.
There you go. Now,
first of all, we're going to talk, and the occasion for Ken coming, the hook that I used to get him, is that he's still, although retired now, still interested in North Carolina Botanical Garden, and there's an upcoming event in September, which is a wonderful plant sale. And then, Ken, the thing you wanted to say is just the garden is doing something special for its members.
That's our members. It's sort of really a garden members appreciation night. At the same time, it's a continuing fundraiser for the garden. It's our annual fall plant sale. And please don't ask me how old it is, because I was thinking earlier today, I'm not sure when we started that sale. I do know the history behind why and how, but I'm not sure exactly when. We had to go back through the old newsletters. But the bottom line is the annual plant sale is just a really, really big special opportunity for gardening people to come out and have an opportunity to purchase native plants that are many of them essentially just unavailable in any other nursery sources. There are a lot of nurseries that are promoting and producing native plants, but nothing like the diversity that we have at the Botanical Garden.
What are some of the things that some of the native plants that might not be that they're not available commercially for very good reasons, I guess, but that you would say come try out one of these plants and put it in your yard or your garden, and you'll love it.
All right. Well, right now I'm not going to be able to give you a on the top of my head specific individual plants, but there are lots of them. For instance, the new gardens coming up, being created, and coming into maturity around the Botanical Gardens' new visitor education center, they are all plants that grow somewhere naturally in Orange or a surrounding county. So they are Piedmont naturally occurring plants. And you go in there, for instance, and you'll see things like, a number of species of native grasses, you know, just like our common broomsedge. Well, there are various species of our common broomsedge. Now, that's what grows on the hot, dry, barren roadsides, or it will come up in your lawn if you will just leave the lawn
so
alone.
Instead of fighting let it be the number one yard cover.
Yeah, and if you get to the point where you appreciate something other than just a mown 1-inch turf or 2-inch turf on the landscape, then you'll learn that, like the broomsedge alone, that single native grass gives a color in the roadsides that wonderful tawny copper bronzy color.
It looks like it's dead. I want a green yard.
Right, you want a green. There's some people who, in the wintertime, because they want a perfectly green lawn in the summer, and so they have, I forgot, is some zoysia grass or something like that. I don't know my lawn grasses, but then in the winter, their lawn is brown. And then it's nice and green and takes drought in the summer. But that's a brown, you know. So
get used to it.
Brown, huh? Golds. I mean, there are all kinds of colors.
Now, can you not? You can't get this. You can't get this grass in the
broom sedge. The broom sedge, various grasses like switchgrass and the Indian grass, a lot of the prairie grasses, which are growing here in certain areas in the Piedmont, most of those are just not available in the general nursery trade. Some of them are beginning to come on board. But if you want to go to one single place for one single experience, and you'll see essentially several hundred species of purely native plants, ferns, wildflowers, grasses, shrubs, vines, trees like pawpaw and persimmons. They're going to be selling pawpaws and persimmons, and they're our native trees that are have very tasty fruits. In fact, there are some organizations or individuals now, particularly I think in Kentucky and in Georgia, parts of North Carolina, who are beginning to establish pawpaw groves. Now, persimmons, they're out there, they're out on the roadsides, and that takes me about, a couple more weeks from now, early September, we're going to be thinking about, the old timers will remember this, persimmon Pete. Pete Ivey, who used to be here with the news services at UNC.
What's the story about Pete and persimmons?
Oh, well, I remember this is way back when
Tell
I started.
Tell us, Pete. I mean, Ken, you're an old timer now, and most people don't remember people like Pete Ivey.
Well,
so tell us who he is first.
I remember way back when I started working at the garden, and I started working with Richie Bell at the Botanical Garden sort of part-time in like 1968 or 69. I've sort of forgotten. Before I was officially employed.
So we should change your
officially
thing to say 19. You've been associated with the garden in a paying capacity, part-time since 1968.
Yeah. Well, I remember back there in like October, November, I remember Richie Bell, our first director, he was always talking about Pete Ivey and his persimmon recipe, persimmon pudding recipe. And I just remember that. And then, so I didn't pay much attention. And then particularly after I started writing the flora articles, I started doing some stories on persimmon just from a botanical aspect, because the flowers are so interesting in the spring when you don't even notice them. And then in the fall of the year, I had already started collecting my own persimmons and making persimmon paste and stuff, or just eating them deliciously. But you have to wait until they're ripe. You don't want to eat, if you eat one that's not ripe, you'll probably never touch a persimmon. But then I got interested in writing about Persimmon Pete Ivey, and so that's when Roland
was that his nickname? Was it? Did the people call him Persimmon Pete?
Persimmon Pete, yeah.
Don't
get into too much detail, but he was called Persimmon Pete because every fall,
now he was with the sort of the public relations guy.
He was with the University News Services or whatever it was called back then, and so he was known all over campus and town and throughout the state. He passed away, and then we have Roland Giddes, who famous, Roland Giddes is a wonderful heritage in our community, and he carried on the Pete Ivy persimmon Pete tradition. So I went and got from Roland his file on persimmons that included old photographs and stories from of persimmon Pete Ivy. And so I found out, and I wrote about this in one of the flora articles, that Pete Ivy, a decade ago, taken up the leadership of persimmon Pete and the championship of the persimmon. Pete Ivey at one time tried to get the state legislature to identify or to adopt or designate whatever the legislature does, that persimmon would be the North Carolina state fruit. So then Roland Giddes picked up, well, it failed, and I mean, that didn't get too far, so Roland Giddes started it. And so he started the effort. But what happened, I think it was maybe 2001, the state legislature designated the Scuppernong grape as the state fruit. Well, we have so many. Well, I mean, you have, I guess they have to designate something. But, you know, North Carolina has so many wonderful native plants that are fruits or nuts. I mean, it's incredible. And the persimmon and the pawpaw are just two of them. Of course, the scuppernong and the muscadine grapes are obviously there.
They're wonderful.
They're
standard. Are they fruit? Yeah. Are they categorized as in botanically as fruits is the
grape. Yeah, what they're berries.
Berries. So you.
But we should have a blueberry. Right? No, yeah. It's a fruit. This is a state fruit.
Okay.
State fruit.
Yeah. All right. Declared by the legislature, yeah. And even though.
And you know, we won't go there.
I tell you where. Let's go now. Let's take a break. I'm visiting with Ken Moore. We're talking about the North Carolina Botanical Gardens. Regular September plant sale and some of the great features of it this year. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is my buddy Ken Moore. We're talking about the North Carolina Botanical Garden, where he works. And the resume says since 1971 as the first full-time employee, but before that, beginning in 1968, he was associated with the Botanical Garden, and so we're upcoming upon a celebration of 45 years. Would that be right? 55, 45 years
well,
of
let me
service.
See. Well,
since from 1968 to now.
Well, if you count that, I'm not full time employee.
Yeah,
now,
I know, but you work as much as many full time employees do. And so, that's a lifetime of service to of association with a wonderful organization. Why don't you move on and do something else?
Well, I do. Like my wife wants me, Kathy. She says, "When are you gonna come home and clean up your office? Because half my office stuff is in her studio. She can't walk in there." I say, "Well, I will." But I guess it's so much fun doing something somewhere else than in your own room, right? But anyway, I obviously like Richie Bell and working with him from the beginning. I obviously was passionate about the garden, just about every person at the garden now is passionate about what they're doing. By golly, they have to be, because they're certainly not being paid because the wages across the board are just don't reward. It's like teachers. You have to be passionate about what you're doing.
Well, I mean, but take a look at it. Of course, we don't pay people in service to the public sufficiently to match the contribution that they make. On the other hand, compared with people who are doing other kinds of work, these folks get to do what they love.
Well, that's part of it. I said, more than once, I said, well, I'm so glad to be here, because, you know, behind the scenes, even at a botanical garden, people would come and say, oh, you're so lucky you work here. I said, oh, yeah, if you knew what goes on behind the scenes, and you've got, anytime you have more than one other person to deal with,
sure,
then you've
got
public relations. But I said, this is so nice, because at least I can walk outside, I can work with plants. And, you know, in the later years, I didn't get to work with the plants directly, but I got to work with the people and I got excited about what they were doing with plants.
Well, Ken, let's change course for just a second and talk about the botanical garden. There are lots of folks who live in Chapel Hill or listen to us who may not have ever been. You know, we'll go next week. We'll go when somebody comes to visit us, but just never get around to visiting the botanical garden, the basketball museum, the Wilson Library, all these things, which are the Gimgul Castle, Twins Garden on Gimgul, and on and on, Southern Seasons, all
oh,
of these
goodness,
things
yeah.
that are that people come to us to see.
Yeah.
So if you're talking to somebody who says, you know, Ken, I've heard about the botanical garden, but I don't know any reason why I should go. how, give us an hour of how, if I came, you did this for me once, if I came to the garden and just said, what's going on, where would you take me?
What a good question. Well, obviously, I would take you first to the main visitor center, where the botanical garden is, right there off of Fordham Boulevard and Mason Farm Road, and because there's signs and what have you there. We would visit the new building, which is a complex of three buildings sort of attached as one building, and the whole new Piedmont species plants beginning to settle that huge building into the landscape. I also would very definitely take you through what we call the cattail gate to the first building that we had, the Totten Center, that we dedicated in 1976.
So you're going to take us, in the botanical garden, you're going to take us first to buildings.
Well, I'm going to take you to, I'm describing areas.
Okay.
I'm not going to take you into the building so much. I'm taking you on the grounds. Like, for instance, a lot of people come and visit, because now sometimes I work as a reception volunteer at the main desk, and people will come and they will ask questions, and they will obviously have enjoyed the gardens around the big new building. But they haven't gone to see the coniferous plant collection, the old perennial border, the Mercer Hubbard herb garden, the habitat gardens that all surround and essentially hide.
Yeah.
The old Totten Center. Now, the Totten Center is no longer open to the public. It's workspace for staff and volunteers.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what excited me.
Yeah.
As somebody who doesn't know too much about plants. But, I mean, gosh, this is a long time ago. I came, and I had my daughter with me, and you took us, the thing that took us to the insect-eating plants.
Yeah, the carnivorous plants.
Yeah.
Pitcher plants, fly traps, sundews, butterwort.
So, you can go in, and if you're lucky, you can see a plant eating an insect.
Yeah. Well, what's so wonderful about that carnivorous plant display, and it's really huge, it's probably the finest display of native carnivorous plants in the entire Southeast. And what's so exciting, right now there are other plants that are associated in the wild with those carnivorous species, so that you can go there almost every 2 weeks. It's a different flower. Right now there are some orchids flowering. About a month ago, we had the cage species lily. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And right now, it's odd. Most people we associate cranberries with New England and New Jersey. Well, there are in a few places in North Carolina cranberries. So we have a whole, in the circular bed, there is a whole ground cover of the true cranberries.
These are wild cranberries.
And they're wild. And right now you can go and it's this wonderful little evergreen vine or prostrate plant, and you can see the little cranberries all just clustered there. They look like little jewels there lying on the ground. But then I would mention, after you see the collections, and you could spend hours just looking at, if you're really keen about individual plants, hours just, wow, what's this? What's that? Now, most of them are labeled, but it's hard. The staff hardly have time to even keep up with the labeling. They need some more people on staff, which is one of the reasons we're having the plant sale, because the plant sale brings in money that helps support.
Does it really raise big time money? I mean, thousands of dollars.
Yeah, the plant sale does raise significant amounts of money. Because we don't have much of a staff or a supply budget.
Well,
from
let me
the
just
state
jump in as a as a sort of infrequent visitor to the garden. And one of the things that is tough sometimes is you're just surrounded by so many plants, and they've got a label, but you don't have anybody really close by to explain exactly what the value.
Right.
On the day of the plant sale, you've got people hanging around who know those plants.
Oh my God!
And can tell you. It's sort of like having a free course, because, say, I'm interested in this persimmon tree.
Right.
Why would that be good? Or I'm interested in this fly trap. How does it work?
Right.
All of that. You've got a chance.
Well, here's a good practical question. Somebody will come up to the plant sale and say, I want to establish a sunny perennial border, and I don't know what to do. So we'll have somebody that might maybe like Sally Heine or Chris LaLoya or any one of the staff there, curators, staff, whatever. Even the volunteer we have, we couldn't do this without the volunteers. We have dozens and dozens and dozens of volunteers who began with us way back in the early, in the late 60s. And they're there and they are so knowledgeable. They'll actually take a person who's wanting to buy some plants by and said, okay, if you've got, and what are your conditions in your yard? Well, this is what you need to do. And well, here, you'll want one of these, like a coneflower. You want maybe one or two of these goldenrods. You'll want the butterfly weed because we've got dozens and hundreds of absolutely beautiful butterflies. Some of them are even blooming right now in pots, and they attract the, you know, the monarch butterflies. They're great, colorful, summer, drought-resistant perennials. So that's if somebody wants to come and say, well, I want to grow ferns. You know, Dot Wilbur Brooks, who's been helping propagate some of the ferns, and she was a full-time staff with me for years and years. Now she's the fern lady who comes in on Fridays and propagates ferns.
Well, Dot Wilbur, so, I mean, this name resonates. Yeah. I mean, sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, this wonderful artwork based on the botanical. I mean, she's one of the
Botanical illustrators.
World's she began, premier,
yeah.
Oh, and my. So she's a volunteer doing something that wasn't her specialty as she was on the staff, but she loves.
Yeah, she'll say, all right, here's what, and she'll even list Southern Shield fern, Christmas fern, Lady fern, and she'll just go on with various ferns, and the ferns are there, so you can. You can essentially purchase and go home with a little miniature garden, but then you've got all the work because gardening is not
What do you mean you just got to dig a hole and put the plant in? Because they're natural. They adapt better than these things.
Well, I tell you what, natural is if humans would keep their paws off the face of this earth. Don't get me started on that. Nature does it in its long, progressive way, and it's not you dig a hole and ground a plant.
Wait a minute. No, because, I mean, I was thinking one of the advantages of the sale at the botanical garden of local plants that you have an edge on buying something that comes from some other part of the country where you've got to water it more and you got to take care of it. But you're telling me no, that's not an advantage. You still got to take care of it.
Any plant that you're planting into an artificial situation, and let's face it, all of our garden turf now is artificial. Or if you go into the woods, look in the woods. And what the native, right now, if you were to go into this is a whole 3-hour seminar, because you can get a little mini seminar with some of the folks there working at the plant sale. But the bottom line is, if you're going to be an active gardener, it takes work. It takes work for me to have my wild garden on my landscape, just knowing what to pluck out, like the exotic, the fescue grasses or the honeysuckle things that come out that are going to be competing with, say, my Joe Pye weed or my broom sedge grasses or things. So gardening is, there's no such thing as a no-maintenance garden.
Visiting with Ken Moore, we're talking about the North Carolina Botanical Garden in the context of its regular fall plant sale. Ken and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest is Ken Moore. Ken's a longtime employee of the staff member of the North Carolina Botanical Garden, beginning his association there as a part-time employee in 1968, and it continues now as a retired volunteer. And Ken, I'm sorry you're not excited about what the garden does and about our native plants.
Right.
about persimmon trees. Can we turn away from the garden for a moment? And one of the great things that you did in your columns for the Carborough Citizen was to point out that we're surrounded, notwithstanding the activities of human beings, we're still surrounded by a whole region full of gardens of natural plant life. And you told us where to go, what to look for, what to look out for. So in the fall, or at the end of the summer, and as you move towards the fall in the Piedmont, in the Chapel Hill Carborough area, what are some of the great things to look for that most of us miss? I mean, give us some ideas about plants or little bloomers that we might look for.
Oh, wow. I'll never stop on this one. Fall For me, the fall wildflowers began several weeks ago with the very early species of goldenrod. And there are like about 40 species, at least, goldenrods.
And these are all?
They're those gold plumes that everybody calls ragweed, because a ragweed essentially doesn't have flowers that you can see. It has candelabra of pollen-bearing structures. So you've got pollen blowing in the air. You don't see, and what you see are the flowers of the goldenrod or the Burr marigold or asters, and you say, oh my goodness, don't bring that in, I'll have, you know. Well, you know, it would take, goldenrods are pollinated by insects. They have to pick up the pollen. So a bee would have to, or a bug, a beetle, a soldier beetle, like a, what it looks like these little lightning bugs, would have to pick up that pollen as they do without knowing it and fly up your nose. You're not going to get goldenrod pollen.
Right,
you're
so,
not going to smell
it. But now what about,
it,
what is so, your, okay, what then, about pick, I mean, you think we should bring it in the house.
Oh my goodness, goldenrod in back in the 1600s was one of the first native plants taken back to English gardens. Goldenrods are a mainstay of the classic perennial borders and the cottage gardens of Great Britain.
But they're imports from us. They're imports
from us, yeah. So, and then by and large, they've come back to us. They've come back to us because if they grow them in English, those gardens are one of them, maybe we should grow them.
But we can see them on the roadside now?
Yeah, and the white asters, the white, what we call thoroughworts, the blue asters. We're just beginning to get the golden asters.
Where do you see them?
They're on the roadsides. You just drive along the road, and where the highway people have not just recently mowed, then, or look back behind the mowing line, and you'll see all kinds of wildflowers expressing, and grasses, the native grass, the broom sedge will start fluffing up its tiny little white seed heads that are just beautiful in themselves. When the sun comes through in the morning or the afternoon, the backlighting of that, it's just like, wow, you just want to stop and look, but you got to watch the traffic. Now, a place to go where it's safer would be the Mason Farm Biological Reserve, right out past Finley Golf Course. We were talking about parts of the garden.
And can you visit there? You have to check it?
Yes, you'd absolutely.
Well, you have to get a little pass
What you want to do is go get a pass so you can.
From the Botanical Garden.
From the Botanical Garden. It gives you a little key card because, you know, on the occasions when the gate is working, the key card lets you go through. It opens the gate, and then you're on in there. It also lets everybody know that there are regulations that we like. For instance, the Mason Farm Biological Reserve there's a lot of research going on, particularly bird studies in addition to the plant studies, and that's a place where John Terrace years ago wrote From Laurel Hill to Siler's Bog, one of the classic natural history books, and this is about the nature in our own backyard. No dogs are allowed and no bicyclists.
Oh, phooey. Okay.
But, yeah. But you people walk there, and there are open fields where Johnny Randall and the garden staff have been managing for the former Piedmont Prairies and the former Oak Pine Savannas with fire. They actually go and with permission and with great organization, they burn some of those fields. So there's a lot of management going. So those fields, you go every 2 weeks starting right now. Right now you'll see the partridge pea in great swaths. You'll see the early several species of goldenrod. Asters are beginning to come up. And from now on, right on through the end of the fall, there's something different happening.
So you've got
all the birds see.
Oh, and the animals. Yeah. Well, this is something I just want to stop to interrupt you to highlight what you're saying, because you're so enthusiastic about it. But to get to the Mason Farm Preserve, go visit the Botanical Garden. Ask any one of the staff members about how you can visit that. They'll help you. And then you can go and make a series of weekend walks whatever it is. Yeah. I know some people who just enjoy this walk, and it's a hidden asset, I think.
Oh, yeah. There are people that have go bird walking there at least once a week, if not every day. There are a few who go every day. And Kathy and I, we used to about every 2 weeks, you would take a weekend morning walk around Mason Farm. Always something different. really exciting. So I want to get back to the plant sale. You're right. Go to the main desk at the reception, and they can give you a map and sign you up, and then you're good for Mason Farm anytime you want to go by.
All right. Why should those of us who aren't really big time gardeners go and visit the plant sale? The botanical gardens, regular fall plant sale that you're so excited about. Why should I go?
Well, because it's wonderful to see little baby plants and medium-sized plants. You know, one of my favorite areas at the garden is I go back and visit Matt, who's the nursery manager, and he's sort of supervising this whole plant sale thing. My favorite area at the garden really is the nursery, where you see all these plants in little pots or big pots, some in flowers, some going to flower later, some flowered earlier, and you want to plant them in the ground now, so you've got a plan established for next year. So fall is for planting, so that's why we have an annual fall plant sale. And the special thing, let me give you the dates. The dates are the weekend of September 27th and September 28th. Now, I realize the football team's playing East Carolina that weekend. Not sure, but anyway, we have a home football game that Saturday. Well, the Saturday sale for the public is 9 to 12, but for members of the Botanical Garden, those are the folks who have been members for, you know, all since the beginning, or maybe recent members.
Or you could sign up that night, maybe.
You can sign up that night. We have a special benefit for members on Friday evening, September the 27th, from 5 until 7, and it's sort of like a wine and cheese and beer and hors d'oeuvre party, so you can come and enjoy those refreshments at no extra cost. If you're a member, you get a 10% discount. Well, it's members' night, so you have to be a member. If your membership has lapsed, you can renew right there at the spot, or you can become a member on the spot. Then you get 10% off purchase of your plants. You get all of that wonderful beverage and nice food, hors d'oeuvres, and you get to look at the plants. And when we come back, I want to talk about what has me so excited this year, because it's something really different. It's all about books.
All right, we'll do that. We're going to take a break with talking to Ken Moore, who I'm going to nominate to work at the county fair as a barker because of his enthusiasm this time for the upcoming North Carolina Botanical Garden plant sale. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Ken Moore. I had to take a break because Ken's enthusiasm just bowled me over. He's so excited about the coming plant sale. And Ken, you have a group of heroes, and one of them, of course, is Richie Bell, who was the guy who brought you on board at the North Carolina Botanical Garden. You got some other heroes, and some of them led you to some books that might be available, magazines and really classic garden stuff that's going to be all for sale, and you want to talk about that, so go ahead.
Absolutely, and thanks, DG, for mentioning Richie Bell, who sadly recently passed away, but wow, he was like the Energizer Bunny. He just kept going and going, and he still is one of my heroes. Another hero from the very beginning was William L. Hunt, or as local folks knew him as Billy Hunt or Bill Hunt. And he's the one, when I was getting my master's degree here in English, introduced me to horticulture and plants and the botanical garden and to Richie Bell. And his passion, he had a passion for plants, and he had a passion for books. And way back early on, he started accumulating books from all over the world, primarily, you know, America and England. And his vision was to help support. He was one of the he supported Botanical Garden. In fact, he is the one who began the Support Botanical Garden Foundation. He was, we call him the granddaddy of that.
Well, he gave some land, too.
And he gave the land, the 100 acres. We call it the Hunt Arboretum, but actually it's not an arboretum as such, because an arboretum needs to be maintained and have labeled plants. The arboretum, we're really maintaining that more as a natural nature preserve, because it's that 100 acres along Morgan Creek that it butts up to the garden's main nature trail, and there are natural rhododendron bluffs there, so better it be preserved as that, because now, you know, natural gardens, nature, like just an old white oak hickory forest, is becoming rarer and rarer as we establish and develop and bulldoze our native landscape. Well, he envisioned eventually the botanical garden would be bigger and bigger as it's becoming, and he wanted the garden to have a huge library that would be a regional resource for botany, horticulture, garden history, landscape, and garden writing. So he began accumulating a huge library of some very, very rare. I mean, we've got collections and some single. We even have a set of, this is wonderful. It was one of Bill's favorite, of four-volume botanical set with the nameplate of Rudolph Valentino. Rudolph Valentino, among other things, was also a gardener, or at least he appreciated looking, having a garden. But anyway, so
what's going to be for sale?
I've been working, helping categorize and catalog all of that. And so there are duplicates, a number of duplicate books. Like we've got duplicates of like John Terrace's Mason Farm Treatment. We have B.W. Wells Natural Gardens. We have duplicates of Elizabeth Lawrence, of Gertrude Jekyll, the famous English garden writer. Christopher Lloyd.
We're going to be selling them.
Yeah, actually, they're for the most part almost giveaway. Dot Wilbur, who's also volunteering with the ferns, she also on Wednesdays volunteers as the volunteer librarian. So we're working together, pulling all this together. We're going to also have some old journals. There are things people never heard of, like garden gossip that goes back to the 30s and 40s and 50s, and it doesn't exist anymore. Bill, for some reason, had multiple copies. So we're going to have some things that people haven't even seen. So people, gardeners and bibliophiles to combine are going to love having plants and having books and old journals, like old issues of horticulture. It's amazing. So you're just going to have to come, and the time to do it is members preview night. It's a party. It's a party for the members, appreciation, and an opportunity.
You can get these things that you might want before everybody else has a chance to come over.
Absolutely. You bet it'll be. And the football game is not until the next day. So it's not going to, those of you who are football fans and gardeners, there's no competition.
Wow. Well, Ken, I want to press you just a second. You're talking about John Terrace's book, From Laurel Hill to Siler's Bog. And I remember when I first moved to Chapel Hill, John Sanders gave me a copy of that book and said, this is your introduction to Chapel Hill. I haven't heard about this book in a while.
It's still in print. It's in paperback, and you can get a new paperback copy. They changed it when they redid it, a decade or so ago, because they wanted to have a more national appeal, and they thought From Laurel Hill to Siler's Bog was way too local, and people wouldn't buy that. So they took the second part of the title, The Walking Adventures of a Naturalist, and so it's now sold as The Walking Adventures of a Naturalist, From Laurel Hill to Siler's Bog, same book, and it's paperback. What we have are first edition, 1969, first edition hard covers. Some of them are discards from libraries from all over the country.
So why would I want a copy? Or why would somebody who's new to all this want a copy?
Well, somebody would want a copy because even if you're new to this area, or if you're old to this area and you don't know Mason Farm, you don't know the natural history of where you live, that you know the sense of your place, you would want this because it describes the common plants, not just animal plants, cottontail rabbit, bobwhite quail, the red and gray fox, the black and the turkey vulture, red-tailed hawks of Booth Hill, of Laurel Hill. It talks about things, the animals and the critters and the seasons.
So when we take
right
this,
here in our own backyard.
When we take this walk that you made on Mason Farm, but you can get your pass at the Botanical Garden.
Read
the book, and you'll see probably some of the same animals that were described 50 years ago.
Well, yeah, they're still here. We even have, there have been cases of, well, we have bobwhite. I mean, not bob, we have bobcats. Occasionally mink come up from the Mason Farms adjoined to all the Beaver Jordan wildlife land. So we have thousands of acres contiguous of wilderness that come right on up into the center of campus.
All right, you sold me. I'm glad I live around here. Ken Moore, talking about the Botanical Gardens upcoming fall sale and about a lot more. And Ken, thanks a lot for coming to visit.
My pleasure. Thank you. We'll see you at Members Night on September the 27th, 5 o'clock.
I'll be there.
Great.
Thanks to Ken. Thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking. I'll be back here before you know it.